IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 64 of the Killing It Podcast. I'm Carl, and I'm here with my friends Dave and Ryan, as usual, still hanging out at home, not going around the world, haven't been to any other countries.
I'm not going to give it away, but there's actually a topic around that. But it's, but yes, but yeah, I mean, we've got a rhythm, right? We've got a rhythm of the way that we're doing it based on this availability.
There are stages of settling in, right? You know, you feel out of place, you adjust, you learn to work from your home office instead of just sitting on the couch, right? You become more standardized and productive. This week, I entered the official phase of, I got way too much stuff in here and I need to root through and get rid of it. I will not admit to how many logo pens I had in my desk drawer, but let's just say I have a problem and that's the first step. And from conferences for a generation, apparently, I think pens are cool and I need to stop that.
Well, for anybody that, so we've done one live event, live podcast where people got to see us on video, but for the three of us, we see one another's office every week. I have to laugh and go, Ryan has been the one nesting more than anybody else.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
During this time frame. Yeah. Ryan went from a completely sparse, barely used office to this week I'm noticing a plant in his office, an actual live plant.
A few weeks ago, he put stuff on the walls.
Right. Yeah. He is completely nesting and now actually has an office.
And at some point, you might not be able to pry me back out of here.
See, you're enjoying it in an all new way.
And if anybody needs a pen, let me know.
My guess is the minute that you have a job in Paris and you can take your wife with you on the trip, you're gone.
Gone. Literally yesterday.
All righty then. So we have a sponsor.
We do. We want to thank this week, Third Tier. Third Tier, it's the idea that it's not the first or second level tech support that you're dealing with. The Third Tier is the real deal. Since 2008, the company Third Tier offers current and former Microsoft MVPs that you can access to help you through a problem, do the part of a project you aren't as familiar with, or even help you make a plan so you don't miss an important step. In all time zones, the best won't compete with you because supporting IT pros is all they do. Embedded with the sense of community that made them MVPs, you can invoke the Third Tier just by opening a ticket. Find out more at thirdtier.net or follow them on social for all the free educational resources that they offer. And I know for us, Carl, you and I both, we've worked with Amy and her team at Third Tier a number of times.
Well, and both of my IT businesses, I have both invoked Third Tier. I have paid them for their services. And prior to that, the looser organization that would become Third Tier. So,
see, and I will say this is one I will personally endorse because it fits with my core philosophy of I don't have to know all the answers. I just need to know a guy who does know all the answers, and then I can present a single face to the marketplace. So, you know a guy.
It's a very cool service. So let's dive in because today we've got some meaty ones. The first one is all very topical. So it's, in fact, even broke as we're sort of coming up on the recording of this. IBM started the trend. They got out of facial recognition. And Amazon just announced yesterday that they are getting out of leveraging their recognition technology with law enforcement and police departments for a one-year period. So they're putting in a moratorium on it. This is the first bit. Guys, what do you think?
So I think it's very interesting that this is happening at a time where, you know, the questions of racial bias are much, you know, in the news, because it isn't necessarily the bias of race within the facial recognition that is the issue. It is the police using this technology that is more of the issue.
to be fair, IBM did raise some concerns about thinking about bias in the algorithms as well. Right. But I agree that the impetus for starting this was the way that technology could be used as people see it very plainly in front of them.
Well, and to get to the momentum and why, you know, this is not a small development. That was not a small, insignificant business unit at IBM. This is more dollars than any of us listening in right now have ever generated in our lives. And they do that annually. But when that happened, right, when that one came out, everything I saw around the industry was, okay, that's cool, but Amazon's is much bigger, much more widespread. And until they do something, then it's still going to be an issue. And oh my God, a day later, they did. And I'm old and gray. I've been around for a minute. And I was legitimately surprised that both of those companies took the steps they did.
I mean, and from a business perspective, clearly they're looking at it and saying that the opportunity, as grass as it may be, is not worth it. It is not worth it. They are making that decision. It's a business calculus as well as an ethical one. And I actually applaud at some level, with like the two of a line, right? They've obviously done the math and they said too hard, too difficult. It's not a great business, but that also is, it's also not the right thing to do.
And it's important to note that in both cases, you have employees who are in a bit of an uproar about letting their technology be used this way. Facebook is facing similar kinds of challenges. And, you know, it's interesting to be in an era where big companies are willing to say, oh crap, my employees don't want to do this. So, you know, we have to make a big, big, big financial decision based on whether or not our employees want to be involved with this technology.
Well, that's a negative way of putting it. And I'll almost turn around and go, like, you know, look, that's also the positive. You want to build a good company, your employees really need to be bought into your mission.
Like, you should actually want your people to want to show up every day. Well, and again, I'll take it as a person who has been an early advocate and acolyte of artificial intelligence, facial recognition, biometric technologies, I still believe that they have tremendous potential and upside. I think that there is a market in the industrial space, in the consumer space, in the retail space, in the entertainment space. I believe that these technologies have and will continue to produce value. But as with any tool, it depends on whose hands it's in and what they intend to accomplish with it. And it is unbelievably good news that the industry is finally saying, hey, wait a minute, let's make some rules and let's think about the ethics of this before we just steamroll into the future because we can.
They're also being pragmatic because they see it coming. Observe. I mean, it's both.
So I was going to say, this is an interesting thing because we're all fans of disruption. Part of what happens with disruption is the big companies say, man, this is really, really hard. And I can't find a way to sell it into my current market. And so along come little companies that figure out a new market. But this is almost like these two really big companies are taking a step back and said, you know what? Let the little guys do the hard work, right? Let them figure out how to do facial recognition without racial bias. Let them figure out how to solve the problems of minors being indexed in these databases who might be victims of crimes, right? There's some
serious... All right. So you brought up the disruptor. I'll bring up the specific example then. There's Clearview AI is clearly the small disruptor. The EU just announced that they are pretty sure, looking at it, that it's illegal in the EU. Like that came out, beyond on Today's Business Tech. And you know, I look and go, I get it. Like the idea of letting the small guys disrupt, but they're also maybe breaking a whole lot more, particularly with technologies like this. And I think it is powerful when the big guys go, there's some real danger here. That is the message they're sending out to the market, in particular to regulators.
And I think everybody agrees at some point these problems will be solved. So it's not the technology itself that is evil or illegal or whatever. It is the fact that it doesn't have certain safeguards, the fact that it has certain problems and it has some challenges that have to be overcome, and to have IBM take a step back and say, you know what, I think we'll just let somebody else solve the big problem. Then we'll go in and gobble up the market.
And you know what, when what you are dealing with is, you know, social interaction in online communities or advertising technologies or CRM application platforms, in those environments, I fundamentally buy the vision of move fast and break things. When it comes to societal issues and when it has real human safety and legal ethical implications, move fast and break things ain't okay. And our industry, we have become enamored with that phraseology coming out of Silicon Valley. Somebody said it, everybody loved it, it sounded snappy. And by the way, it is a form of the misinterpretation. When we say agile, that does not mean the same as move fast and break things. What it means is I don't really care what the consequences are, and I'm going to go until somebody whacks me and tells me to stop. I appreciate it. We've discussed this before, and we've lamented that other segments of the industry just don't care, and they're steamrolling forward because they can.
Well, let's observe.
The fact we're stopping here, that's a positive sign.
Words matter, right? There's a big difference between move fast and break things versus move fast and change things, for example. Like if they made a subtle change, choice of words, I mean, they are in some ways implying breaking and damaging things is okay. I mean, if I said, let's damage democracy, that doesn't seem like a great thing to break, right? Or break laws. Like it implies that you can break things that are not appropriate to do. There is a big difference between change things and break things, for example. And I think this is that call to, like, you know, take a breath, tech. Let's think about what we're doing here sometimes, because just because we can do something doesn't mean we should do something.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens next, because these guys, you know, IBM isn't going to just shelve this stuff. Will they sell off a division and then buy it back in 3 years? Will Microsoft buy it? Will Apple buy it? You know, I mean, when you say they have this huge, huge investment, it doesn't just go away.
Yeah, don't just stop doing it. Plus, on the flip side of that, once you've had a taste, it's not like the law enforcement agencies are going to be like, you know, I agree, I'll stop using it. I had it for a little bit and it was awesome, I liked it, and then I'll just stop using it. No, they're going to find another provider. They're going to find another way. It's just that it needs to happen in the context of an honest conversation around the legal, ethical, moral implications of that technology. And I don't doubt that this is the first. It will not be the last area of our technology. We keep saying, guys, the stuff we do is no longer nice to have. It's mission critical. Careful what you wish for, because when you're mission critical, now you got to think about the more important
implications. Well, and we've discussed in a different show about the use of facial recognition in airports and to fight terrorism and so forth. So the government isn't going to step away from it completely and entirely, and nor should they.
Right.
So the question is, what's the appropriate use? Which is the appropriate technology? How do you put some safeguards in place? You know, it's like many, many other things going on today. We need to be having this conversation.
Right. And by the way, you make it actionable for a moment. You know, a lot of politics is local. If you're a technology.
It seems like Dave has locked up. He choked up there. He was so excited about it. You need to.
David, are you back? Your tech.
I am back.
Start that thought over and I'll make a note of the time.
All right. So what I'm saying is the channel takeaway here, the local specific thing to think about is most politics is local. You need to, if you're a technologist in your local community, you need to provide information to your local government, to your local representative, give them perspective and be part of the solution. That is a great opportunity to engage.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Very good. That will do it for that topic. Topic two today is I'd like to just step up and throw up one of my pet peeves, my brand new pet peeve.
Okay. On the table.
since this show is largely about how we talk about things and terminology we use, I would like to ban the term new normal for the rest of history.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Topic number three. All
right. Well, it's okay. So, because I think I know where you're going with this, and elaborate a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, fundamentally, we are in an industry, and we're growing into related industries that are all moving at the speed of sound. And more and more and more, we hear this term new normal. What's going to happen after the pandemic? What's the new normal? What happens when we get back to the new normal? On one hand, there's never a new normal. And on the other hand, there's a new normal in technology every month. When you look at what we talked about and what the headlines were and what the terminology was used 3 years ago, 8 years ago, 12 years ago, it's completely different. And there's never a new normal in the sense that we go through an election and there's a new normal. We go through an economic upturn, downturn, whatever. There's a new normal. We have a new generation of technology, and there's a new normal. And it goes on forever and ever and ever. We can never go back to what it was yesterday, whether it has to do with this pandemic or anything else. And so this whole idea of the new normal, it's just, I think that's a word that for tomorrow.
Okay. So I don't disagree with you, but I want to expand it a little bit and say, like, so humans are really bad at change. Like people inherently do not like change, despite the fact that, like, we're all in an industry that is changing all the time. Your statements are 100% true. Humans actually don't like change as a general rule. There is a comfort level.
Unless they create it.
Agreed. There is a certain ingrained way of thinking to try and organize data and events into clusters and into groups to try and process things. So there is the power of it, not that I'm advocating for it, but the power of these, this is the new normal, that's the new normal, this is a change, like, is to try and process and organize a set of events and their ongoing implications. So there is, as you are processing, for example, on March 1st, you're plugging away thinking you're going to be doing concerts and travel and some for the rest of the year. And then by March 30th, you quickly realize that is no longer the reality. You're trying to process that. And you're trying to process whether or not this is a very short-term disruption or a long-term disruption. And so the phraseology is part of the processing of that. I agree with you completely. It
sounds the terminology is part of the human objection to uncertainty and risk. And what we're seeking is to process change for understanding through pattern recognition, right?
Right, right.
This is familiar or unfamiliar. I'm gonna look for other things that I have seen before. But I'm going to disagree slightly on the humans don't like change. Change happens every single day, significant and disruptive every single day. What we don't like is uncontrolled, unspecified, unendorsed change, right?
All right.
The way I've been asking this question for many years with business owners and leaders, when we talk about Dave's favorite topic, business transformation.
We're not doing that today.
Transformation, right? I had to get it in there. Right. When we talk about that topic with people, significant overhaul, operational changes, and getting rid of things you have done, my first thing is change is hard. Everybody hates change. Yeah, humans, they don't like change. Okay, everybody that's in the room with me now, please raise your hand if you are married. Many hands go up. Then I say, okay, please keep your hand up if you were born married. All the hands go down, right? Okay, so what we're saying is, ask yourself, was getting married a disruptive change in your life? Was it expensive? Was it uncertain? Was it difficult? Did it require compromise, new skills, and other things that attend significant change? Absolutely it did. And yet you volunteered for that thing. You didn't just volunteer for it. Cash money for that privilege, and you went out of your way. You begged for the opportunity. You can't convince me that people don't like change. What people don't like is unspecified, undefined change. If you can script the change for people, they can go with you. What they're missing, and it is exactly where you went, Dave, what they're missing is the pattern recognition. I don't know what comes next, therefore I don't dare take a step. That is what we mean when we say agile, right? Agile is defined by constantly moving forward.
So let me add one more variable, kind of on top of what Ryan just said. So the other element is that sometimes we dread the future and sometimes we look forward to the future. So, you know, if you have absolutely no job prospects, you dread graduating from college. On the other hand, if you've got an internship or you've already been hired at some company, then you're looking forward to graduating, right? And so so how you move into the future depends a lot on how you are perceiving where you are right now and what direction that you're going, right? And we endlessly as human beings try to find a new term for the new. Like, oh, I want to be modern. I want to be up to date. I want to be hip. Oh, wait, hip is old. If you're hip, man, you're 30 years old.
Right? It's cutting edge. It's bleeding edge.
Right. So, you know, what's the new term for the new modern, super modern, ultra modern? Right? So, you know, I understand the need to put names on things, but it just irritates the hell out of me.
Yeah, see, because I agree with you. What we don't want to hear is new normal. What we do want to hear is this is life, and in order to thrive in it, you must not be stagnant. You must continue to evolve. I think what people fear about the future, if they fear the future, is the lack of them seeing their place in it. If you see a spot for you, cool, bring it on. If you look out there and go, I'm yesterday and that's tomorrow and I don't think I'm going to be relevant here, then people will fight it all day long. I think that the essence of business is change management, right? That is the one fundamental skill that every business must have. I ask it in a very tactical way. Take a look at all the things that you do for money in your business. And ask yourself what percentage of that revenue comes from things that you did not do prior to 2 years ago. Because if that percentage is under 20%, then what that says to me is that on a 5-year rolling basis, you are falling behind the world. If you cannot continuously refresh your revenue base with brand new things you never did before, you're applying for the job of dinosaur and you're about to be hired.
Applications now being taken in terms of applying for dinosaur. Yeah, look, and we can keep going on at that. I think the one thing that I'm going to end this by saying, yes, we will not use the new normal.
Okay.
But I will also implore people to be understanding of that those periods of uncertainty, particularly when it comes to interpersonal relationships. And just a small example, for example, we're all learning new social norms right now in terms of behavior. I'll give a silly example. We were planning to get together for some socially distanced drinks in a friend's backyard, and we'd never had to talk about the number of people invited, not because we don't like somebody or something along those lines, but literally we're just trying to determine, is there enough space to do this safely? Right.
Is your picnic table long enough?
Right, exactly. And so I would just say everyone, a little patience goes a very long way when dealing with this. So,
new things are always weird.
Yes.
All righty. So topic number 3, who wants to patiently introduce?
Ryan, why don't you? You brought us this one.
Yeah, so this is... I think this is a professionalizing of a topic that we've been bumping around a little bit, right? If you guys will remember, a couple of months ago, we discussed a study. Microsoft in Japan did an experiment where they tested out the concept of a 4-day work week. Not 40 hours crammed into 4 days, but legit 4 days, and then see what happened. And what they tracked out in their data was more productivity because people had more time to think and react and recuperate, and people were more satisfied, more engaged in their job. They wanted to be here. And if you want to get really literal about it, revenue per headcount went up over the period of the experiment. So today, what we're sharing with you guys in the show notes, a couple of links that we put in there on the four-day work week. And again, I'm not being a floofy wacko when I say, hey guys, let's all just have a hug and business will be better. And maybe if we just work less. I'm looking at this from a hardcore business productivity and competitive positioning point of view and examining, is there a way, not just remotely working, not just socially distantly working, but to use this period of change to re-examine, why in the hell do we insist on a 5-day, 40-hour work week and call that normal? Where'd that come from? Somebody made it up. And if they made it up once, we can make up something new. I think technology makes us more productive. I think that the idea of burnout and crushing people with too much work and not enough recuperation is real. And I think the competitive marketplace for recruiting qualified, high-end human talent is going to get a heck of a lot harder in the next year than it has ever been. You might need a new weapon. And if that weapon sounds like, please join us and read the details, because this is not just Ryan, Carl, and Dave having an opinion session. There's actual science around the fact that if we burn out our people less, they will actually produce more and want to be here.
So interestingly, let's take a real step back and let's think of this from a historical perspective. The 5-day work week is at some level entirely arbitrary, right? This came about from, you know, factories that were working all the time and recognized that working people continuously was probably a bad idea. They also had labor revolts that caused them to have to renegotiate in order to give employees actual time off. And the negotiated answer was the 5-day work week. From its origin, it is entirely arbitrary. Like, we have 5 days because that's what they settled on in those labor negotiations, not because anybody said, you know what, this is actually the optimal number. The right. Optimal number from a business perspective is 7, right? Everybody working all the time. Except when you look at what Ryan's saying here and you say, well, if we're measuring this, not just on raw, like how much labor do I get, but in terms of actual productivity, if you're saying, well, where's the optimal bit, it might actually be at that 4 days. That's what the science is now telling us. I think it's going to be really interesting to look at organizations. There are organizations now who are making that their competitive advantage in hiring. That there are some organizations that say, we work 4 days a week. That is, you want to work here, you're part of your package is you get 3 days to recuperate. We're all finding, not in the current, right? And to not use Carl's phrase, in the current, we're finding time in new ways. We've been completely disrupted. People are having dinner at the table that they didn't before. They're commuting less. They are re-examining all of these choices. And I think there's a space for this. I think there is definitely a space to say, let's re-examine this.
I have to say, I wish I'd have written a book about this 15 years ago called Relax, Focus, Succeed. I think one of the most fundamental things that human beings need to do is recharge their batteries. And I think it's insane. You know, it's funny. From my perspective, you know, a lot of why this hasn't already just made its way into society is because the people who run businesses, as a rule, are super type A, go, 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 you know, personalities who are headed towards, you know, a heart attack in their 40s. And they somehow believe that you can treat human beings like machines. And one of the interesting things in one of these articles is, you know, Henry Ford saying, hey, you know, maybe if we gave somebody a 32-hour work week, they would be more focused, more refreshed, more attentive, right? Da, 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 da. I think that's completely true. But if you know, think about the companies, you know, even really small companies, there are people who are literally afraid to let their employees have a day off because what are they going to do? The assumption is, well, they're going to go start another business or going to work for the competitor half time or whatever. They never think, well, maybe they're going to enjoy time with their kids or take up a hobby or learn how to do something or be productive or just relax so that they're more focused at work.
To borrow one of Dave's points from earlier, your employees are not the enemy. They are the essence of your organization, right? Because organizations are eventually just a group of people doing some stuff. And hopefully it's structured and regulated and measured and forecastable. And I believe in all of that stuff. But one of the points, especially the PDF that we've attached here, it hits a point that is just so central to the business consulting that we've been doing for years. And it's something that I think most of those type A personalities miss out on. Whatever your strategy is, even if it's the best strategy ever in the history of ever, and you're going to win, if all the people who show up every day don't agree, it's not going to work. If the humans don't want to go with you, I don't care how cool your strategy is. It can't work if the people don't want to be here. And if the people don't want to be here because they're overworked and underpaid and burned out and they hate their boss, you know what? I haven't worked at a place where I hated my boss in 20 years, because when I got to a point where I said, I really hate that guy, I would like to fight him in the parking lot, I left and I went someplace where I didn't regret being there every single day. Please treat your humans in a way that they actually want to be here.
You're doing better than me, Ryan, because I can't say it's been nearly that long. But so I'll close this out with sort of my thinking on this. I've been looking back on sections of my career to examine, you know, bits that worked and bits that didn't. And I constantly remind myself that my most successful moments was when I was investing the most in people, and my least successful moments were when I was not valuing that nearly enough. You know, my best moments in my career was when I was just looking at my job as empowering those that work for me and getting problems out of their way. That was when my everything fired on all cylinders. And when I was not in that lane and farthest from it, that's when I was least successful. So that's my sort of thinking on that is look, I think I would over, if I was, anytime I would be starting a business, including what I'm doing right now, like I will over invest in people now, because that is my takeaway to it.
Very good. Well, I have much, much more to say about this, and you can read it all in Relax, Focus.
There actually is
that. Ding, ding, ding.
Available everywhere fine books are sold. Thank you all. And I literally could go on and on about this, you know. But
I believe you have, and there's some podcasts and other topics that you can go on. So,
but we shall not. We shall instead bring to an end episode 64 of the Killing It.
Killing It
podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.